understand like, the villas that are three, this gives me a very good insight to know, because then I really know all the villas and I don't really know what it's about, and I'd like to understand a little bit further, so maybe this is more scheme. Yeah.
It's beyond my knowledge. Dates, numbers, I can only speak in principle about them. And generally, we view these things through the window of the Bhagavad Purana. And in the end of the Bhagavad Purana, in the 12th canto, some mention of the different Puranas is there, how many there are, how many slokas they have, and that has some specific purpose. But it's more in our interest because of their volume, how vast they are, to look toward our acharyas who distill the essence of what they're presenting. Otherwise we can get lost in the periphery or on things that are arouse curiosity but do not instill one with devotion. So we'll see some section or some instruction that appears to be very external or mundane. And Srila Guru Maharaj gave the example because someone said, well, are they not Krishna or the body of Krishna? And he gave an interesting example by saying, well, just like a man has a body, so he has nails, hair, skin, bones, veins, etc., blood flow, heart flow, a brain, an intellect. So if we follow this sort of analogy, and we'll see, just like on the body, the nails or the hair are considered half alive, half dead, not vital to one's essence, one's existence. So to try and, you know, like a scientist, they may take a hair sample and try and understand, that may have its value on a certain level, but it will not give us insight into the person's thinking, right, which we will take as being more central to who they are and their identity, whereas the external things, something like that. So we're in the example that you mentioned, our interest is the fruit. So if that tree of the Veda produces the Vedanta Pushpa, the flower of Vedanta, and then comes the Bhagavat Palam, the fruit, that is what is being personified and represented by Mahaprabhu and his followers, then our time is short and limited. We should direct our focus to there. Just as we hear Sanatana Goswami, when he retired with a group of Brahmins in an assembly with an exhaustive analysis and study of Srimad Bhagavatam, and we see he presented a work like Brihad Bhagavatamritam, which we see especially in his tika and his commentary, how all these different slokas from the Bhagavatam reveal some essential point about progressive devotion. So we're really trying to move in the direction that they've indicated. We hear those Goswamis, Nana Shastra Vicharanaitis, no, Siddhartha Samstapako. They were expert at extracting this. Otherwise, as Srila Guru Maharaj said, if you look at it superficially, you'll see that they primarily point one in the direction of Brahma. And then on a more closer examination, Paramatma, hinting at Bhagavatam, at Bhagavan, here and there. And it's gradually going in that direction through different Puranic descriptions. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Mahapurana, Super Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam is given the most attention. And what does it culminate in? The presentation of Krishna Lila, and particularly exalting the position of the Brajagopis. So, as Guru Maharaj mentioned, when he met with a pundit who knew every sloka by heart, and they had some discussion, and Guru Maharaj said, who do you take it to be the highest devotees? And he said, the Kumaras. Guru Maharaj said, they're in the lowest position. And then with two slokas from the Bhagavatam, he established the highest position. So, first indicating Uddhava's position, Natatapriyatama Amyonim Shankara. Natcha Sankarsana Nasri Nayavatma Chayata Bhavan. Where Krishna himself is saying, there's no one more dear to me than Uddhava, not Brahma, not Shiva, not Lakshmi, not my brother, Sankarsan. No one is as dear to me as Uddhava. And then from the mouth of Uddhava comes Asamaho Charanarina Dasham Hamsham. He expresses the aspiration to be, have the remotest connection, an atomic presence in the plane of the gopis' service, their lotus feet. So, some general understanding of that is all that's really necessary. And rather, we should give the maximum focus and energy upon what's been extracted by the Goswamis, Shastras of Nana, Shastra Vichara. They were expert in how to view them and extract what is essential from them. And we find that in their works, and particularly Chaitanya Charitamritam. What is most essential has been presented there because of the great tendency to misread Krishna Lila, and rather than seeing it as aprakrita, to view it as prakrit, mundane. The greatest caution has to be exercised in presenting that. And Srila Guru Maharaj, Kaviraj Goswami, has done that in Chaitanya Charitamrita in such a way that it cannot be misunderstood. And then he said, and still it is. He presented it in such a way that it cannot be misunderstood, and it is still misunderstood. And when another time when someone is trying to elicit some sort of list like this from Srila Guru Maharaj, he deferred to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Das Mool, where he said, these are the 10 root understanding that we should be mindful of in Bhagavad philosophy. Amnaya Prahat Tattvam, that it's revealed truth, first of all. We're not interested in the opinions of those who are not representing revealed truth. Right, so we're focusing on revealed truth. Amaya Prahata. Haram Iha Param. And there is described the supreme position of Krishna and all its gradations. Sarva Shakti, and he's the master of potency. Potency. Shakti means there's male, female representation in the absolute truth. And their interaction and Leela and all, it's all springing up. So Sarva Shakti, he possesses all such potencies, and Rasabdin, and he's an infinite ocean of Rasa, Akhila Rasamrita Murti, etc. It's describing this in the Jiva, this liberated soul, non-liberated soul, here's how to come out of that position, and this is the process, and the process is given by him also as Gaurachandra, as Mahaprabhu. You see, direct your attention toward this, otherwise we'll be misguided and start focusing on what is non-essential.
Did the Vyasa wrote only four shlokas and then the Sukadeva Goswami expanded and then Sutta expanded? So he,
No, we hear that Krishna to Brahma, and there you find the nutshell sloka of the Bhagavatam.
Krishna giving to Brahma the four.
We may take it that way. They're represented there. You know, we have to avoid being literal about these things. It's represented there in that way. And whether down to every last syllable and letter, this is that's irrelevant. Because we see when it all springs out, how extensive it is. So, Krishna, we hear that in the beginning, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adhikavaya, the original, is inspired, divinely inspired, and Brahma to Narada. And Narada approaches Vyas in his ashram when he's feeling despondent and tells him, it's because you've only thus far demonstrated to people or given them indications how to come out of illusion, but you haven't described in the liberated world what life awaits them there, what prospects. So if you're unclear about that or only hinting, they'll be more prone to just go on with conditional life, observing some rules. They'll accept some religious guidance for within the plane of the mundane. So you have to give them a clear idea of what the prospect is after liberation. And that meant, that indicated Krishna Lila, the pastimes of Krishna, Muktirhat Manitam Rupam Swarupena Vibhastati. That real liberation means to be situated in one Swarup, Jive Swarupai Krishna, where, in Guru Maharaj's language, the slave of Krishna. But what is that slavery? We find in the 10th canto, the cowherd boys playing with Krishna, Yasoda, Nanda, their pastimes, Krishna's pastimes, but as a cowherd, and his pastimes with the gopis, that all the full spectral range of human relationship is in play there to its fullest extent, whereby a loving exchange with the Supreme Entity, every atom of one's existence is finding fulfillment. So sometimes Guru Maharaj is like four or five sittings. Brahma, Krishna, Krishna to Brahma, Brahma to Narada, Narada to Vyas, Vyas to Sukadeva, Sukadeva to Parikshit, Sutta to the sages. And then what Vyasa is writing, he's compiled all of that. So what precisely he told the Sukadeva, that's not indicated there. Just in the Dwarpara Yuga, he transmitted this to him.
And who has given the final forms?
Vyasa has compiled that. He compiles Vedas. He's also doing some original writing. So in this book, he's within it, without it. He's part of the story, but he's also presenting it. So sometimes he's referring to himself as Bhagawan, because perhaps Sutta is, or he's writing there under some divine influence. But, you know, Srila Guru Maharaj in a sloka is told that Yadam Miya Mahima Sri Bhagavatyam Kathayam. If we look at it, where is this all going? It's taking us in the direction of the service of the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. Her position is being revealed as being the most exalted. And what better evidence is there than the appearance of Mahaprabhu? Krishna, he knows what went into the heart of Brahma, to Narada, to Vyas, to Sukha, to Sutta, to Parikshit, to Sutta. That Krishna, who's inspired all of this, what inspires him? We find she inspires him most, to the extent that he covets her heart, halo, and identity. So what greater indication could there be than Krishna himself acknowledging and underscoring this? And we're told in the Charitamritam to identify the zenith, that when Uddhava is delivering Krishna's message to the Vraja Gopis, and Radharani enters her divine madness, as recorded in the Brahmar Gita, told that in the last 12 years of his life, 24 hours a day, in the association of Ramananda Roy and Srup Damodar, that he was absorbed in that particular type of divine madness, Pralapita Bhakya, and so many mad expressions. At that point, saying Uddhava Darshane, when they met with Uddhava and she exhibited that, this as recorded in Yadanu Charitalita Karna Piyushabhukru, etc., these slokas are there. 10 different types of divine madness identified by Rupa Goswami and the Acharya, 24 hours a day hitting that point.
12 years.
For 12 years. 24 hours, to the point grinding his divine, pulverizing his divine form by grinding it into stone walls, the intensity of that ecstasy and divine madness is so great, or causing all of the limbs of his body to enter like a tortoise, or from them all become elongated, each joint separated by 8 inches. So we're seeing some kind of contraction and expansion playing the waves, the inundation of the waves of ecstasy upon his body, and he's identified this as the focal point. So those in this line, they're directing their attention toward the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu, and with the basic understanding, what leads them to draw this conclusion is that in summary form, we're being told human form of life is rarely achieved. That can be demonstrated spiritually or materially. It's a rare occurrence. And what is its unique facility? It shared facilities with other life forms. What is the unique facility of this? It's obviously internal culture, beyond instinct, internal culture, inner development, that we understand intuitively that consciousness is a superior substance to matter. Right? Although we're prone and outer directed towards matter, we know intuitively human life is meant for inner culture. And what is that inner culture?